This is Pac-12 football.
Jordan Webb, pressure from the back, and down he goes in the arms of Big Will Sutton.
Barkley, oh, he got clobbered as well. This time Anthony Barr will record the sack.
Heisman hopefuls.
Caught! Marquise Lee! Touchdown, SC! 75 yards!
Mariota firing, lofting, and
touchdown, the Black Mamba!
Championship caliber teams.
Hand off Taylor, left side, running, first down! Stanford's gonna win the Rose Bowl!
The Conference of Champions brings you the Pac-12 Network's football podcast. Here are your hosts, Mike Yam and Rick Neuheisel.
Staring down championship weekend. Full coverage here on the Pac-12 Networks. It's the football podcast. Rick Neuheisel, Mike Yam with you. An exciting time for football fans because now all of a sudden we get to crown a champion. We are looking ahead, and this has been a huge week, Rick, for the Pac-12, not just in terms of actual football play. X's and O's, that is.
Yeah, lots of news. Lots of news in and around these fine institutions and their football programs. And, you know, Mike, this is an exciting time, as you mentioned, because we have two teams that are going to collide on Saturday in Tempe that really have played well here at the finish of the season. Cal, obviously dominant in their big game against, Stanford, dominant in their big game against Cal, and then certainly also impressive against Notre Dame, a game that has national implications with respect to recruiting, and two great alumni bases, and then Arizona State, finishing with a flurry with a win in the Rose Bowl against UCLA to clinch the title, and then an exclamation point in their territorial cup against in-state rival Arizona. So it's exciting that this is the culmination of the Pac-12 season, and I think we've got two great champions that are going to square off and give us a great show.
Can't wait to focus in on that matchup coming up a little bit later here on the podcast. But the bit of news that you and I sort of alluded to, which is the fact that we have a new football coach at USC, Steve Sarkisian, no longer at the University of Washington, taking over at a place that he's very familiar. I think it's something like five separate stops that Sark has had, including now this one. Rick, initially, your thoughts on Steve Sarkisian leaving Seattle, where it seemed like things were trending in the right direction. I know Sark has said, hey, I'm leaving the program in a better place, which is clearly the case than when he arrived. The facilities that are there, we were there back in August. They're gorgeous. But to now take over at USC, a place that's sort of home for him.
Well, if you'll recall, when this job became available, decision was made to move in separate directions from then head coach Lane Kiffin, I told you Sark was going to be one of the top guys on that list, because Sark not only has a great affinity for USC and was part of a monster era, if you will, when Pete Carroll was in charge there, he also now has proven himself as a head coach. He built a program that, when he got it, was 0-12. It was going to be a big deal now whether he could take the next step as the head coach at Washington and take him through that 7-win threshold. And it was interesting when you read Pat Hayden's comments about what struck him, why Sark was the right guy. He pointed at going through that 7-win threshold, getting to 8 wins at the University of Washington, he thought was a benchmark deal. And that's why, coupled with his understanding of the Trojan culture, what makes USC tick as a monster football program across the country, I think all those things were reasons why Pat Hayden said, you're our guy.
Does he have the makeup, though, to turn this program around? And I hate to even say turn it around, because they're obviously had a fairly successful season, not in USC terms, but I think in comparison to some of the other programs that are in the Pac-12. I mean, heck, Ed Orgeron had 6 wins in conference play. Sark had 5. I mean, that's just sort of some perspective for you as you look ahead. Can Sark make this the elite program that I think people think of USC as?
Well, obviously, Pat Hayden thinks so. And, Ed Orgeron did a fabulous job. Let's call it like we saw it. It was a terrific job. The question I think Pat Hayden had in his mind was, Ed Orgeron the guy for that job in the however many days are between now and the start of next season? in those days, you know, and wearing all the different hats that head coaches wear. And in Steve Sarkisian, he had, I think he articulated he was captivated by the personality, captivated by the youth, captivated by the leadership qualities, and all the different things that make up a head coach. And when you're imagining him not just in a locker room and on a sideline, but also in front of alums and in front of boosters, you know, that are so important and integral to athletic departments anymore. So those are the kind of things, and certainly in recruiting. You know, so those are the things that I think Pat Hayden was weighing as he decided the future leader for USC. And, you know, Pat Hayden feels very comfortable. And I'll say this, Pat Hayden's a bright guy. We don't know that he's right, and Sark said as much. If I'm beating UCLA and I'm beating Notre Dame a couple years from now, it'll have been the right decision. If I'm not, then it wasn't. But I know Pat Hayden is a very, very bright man, and I know that he trusts his instincts on this one. His instincts told him Sark was the choice.
Got to win football games. That's the key. That's what Ronnie Lott actually said yesterday. We had the press conference live here on the Pac-12 Networks. Ronnie hopped into studio with us, and I had asked for his reaction. He's telling me and sort of painting the picture. And he didn't seem excited. And I just turned to him while we were on air. You know, this is not behind the scenes stuff. And I said, Ronnie, are you excited? Because when there's a new coach, there has to be a sense of renewal. Ronnie said he's not excited.
I go back to what I've said many times, and this is going to sound like a bitter ex-coach, all right? People today are hiring people trying to win the press conference.
Yeah.
That wasn't Pat Hayden's approach, and as I go back, I think he's very smart. That doesn't mean this is the right hire. We'll have to wait and see. Sark has pointed that out. But you don't hire people just because people are going to be excited. They were not excited when Pete Carroll got hired. There was lots of commentary to the exact opposite. How can you do that? How can you give a job to a guy like this? And yet Pete Carroll has proven over and over again he's not only a good coach, he's a great coach at now the professional level as well as the collegiate level. And so I don't think you worry about that. I think he looked enough into the background, knew enough of the history of Sark while at USC, has seen the maturation of him as a head coach while at Washington, supervising a program that was going through a tough time now back at least on the brink of being back in the conversation of championship play here in the Pac-12. And I think he saw enough to say that's the best guy that's out there currently. And like I said, he had ample time to do due diligence as to how to go about picking the right person. And he's no dummy. Pat Hayden's a bright guy. So I'm not questioning his judgment here.
Well, new opportunity in Seattle opened up for someone. Give me the guy, the good fit that UW could be looking at.
Well, there, you know, as I think about it, there's probably a number of names that Scott Woodward is going to look at. One would be Gary Pinkel. Gary Pinkel's currently the head coach at Missouri. They've got an SEC championship game, probably very happy at Missouri given the season that they've enjoyed, probably a contract extension on the horizon, especially with this looming as a potential. So we'll wait and see about Gary Pinkel, whether or not he'd want to go back to where he coached for Don James and is clearly a Don James disciple. Remember, Gary Pinkel chartered a plane to make sure he was at the services for Don James on that Sunday at their basketball arena. So I'd say he'll be a guy that they'll talk about. I would say that Doug Nussmeier, the offensive coordinator for Alabama, I think Nick Saban, also a Don James disciple, will call on his behalf and try to get Doug an interview and a chance at this job. Doug was on Sark's staff for 3 years at the University of Washington, so he's familiar with what it takes to be successful with respect to recruiting and so forth. He'll be in the mix. I would say Tim DeRuiter, the coach currently at Fresno State, you know, had a great year. Unfortunately, they lost to the San Jose Spartans in their last week of play to keep them from having the chance at a BCS Bowl, but they're going to play in a Mountain West title game this week against Utah State. I think Tim is, you know, a guy that's going to be on the radar of athletic directors looking for a coach. And then Certainly, Justin Wilcox, the defensive coordinator, Sark has said he wants to take him with him. He's got a big buyout, unusual
for an assistant. Like that?
No, it's $1 million.
Oh, is it?
As well, I don't have the contract in front of me, but what I've heard is $1 million, which is huge for an assistant coach. You know, remember he came with Sark from Tennessee. I know the two of them have a great relationship. I know Justin Wilcox would love to be the head coach at Washington, and that would be his first choice. But if he doesn't get that opportunity, I would assume that he would go on with Sark, assuming that the money can be handled and not hurt Justin Wilcox personally. So he'll be in that phase. And then the guy that I'm going to throw out, and he pulls at my heartstrings because I coached him, but Marcus Tuiasosopo. Marcus is, 35 or 36 years old right now. He was the last Husky quarterback to take him to a Rose Bowl. One of the things that they complained about Sark up in the state of Washington was his inability to keep in-state recruits at home. Miles Jack is from right across the lake at Bellevue High School, and yet he's playing for UCLA. Stanford has two offensive linemen, Scott Garnett, that is, a Puyallup kid. The big offensive lineman from Tacoma, Zach Banner, is at USC. There's a quarterback that was from Skyline High School at USC that was, considered one of the top guys in the country. So to keep people in state from the state of Washington is critical to the Husky success. And I think Marcus, because he's that person. He's from that area, went to Washington, can say why it was such a valuable decision for him, can go into homes and say, listen, I'm not asking you to do anything I haven't done myself. I think that's a guy that can keep those kids at home, and I certainly has the cachet to put a very experienced group around him and build this thing. He's not going to use the University of Washington job, and I don't mean this disparagingly to Sark, because I don't think he went in with the idea, I'm using this to get the SC job.
A springboard type deal.
Yeah, this is not a springboard opportunity for Marcus Tuiasosopo. This would be his job that he would covet for the rest of his coaching career if he were fortunate enough to get it.
Let me ask you this, because you raise a lot of points with Marcus and his ability to be able to keep guys in the area and keep them home in Seattle. Sell me on what the critics would probably point out. Correct me if I'm wrong. Hasn't been an offensive coordinator before. Obviously hasn't been.
No, the first thing you're going to say is no experience.
Yeah. So how do you, what's the alternative then? Like how could Scott Woodward go out and say, hey, because there's going to be a fan base, they're going to say, well, guys, what are we doing here? We went from Sark. We're coming off an 8-win season.
Sark had no experience, by the way.
Okay, that's a good, but he was an offensive coordinator. I'm playing devil's advocate here, because to make a choice like that, there's going to be, you know how this is.
Right.
People are going to be critical over a decision like that.
I think those are all great points. And so you build a staff that handles all those deals. I think he would have to get somebody on his staff that would had head coaching experience. I think he'd have to get somebody on his staff that was terrific X and O guy on offense and a terrific X and O guy on defense. But in terms of the face of the program, Marcus Tuiasosopo, and think of the Polynesian student athlete that is so heavily recruited on this west side of the United States. Who better to get in front of them than a Polynesian American, who grew up, was a fantastic student, over a 3.0 at the University of Washington, was everything, the poster boy of the program. And to have a chance to be back there and building it, certainly he'd need help. But which head coach doesn't? And if you're totally writing off guys who have only those who have not had head coaching experience, well, now your list gets shorter.
Yeah.
And is that going to excite? You talked about Ronnie Lott not being excited. Who's going to excite the masses? Is it going to be Gary Pinkel? Maybe. If you can get him away from Missouri, that's going to be expensive. Or is it Tim DeRuiter, who probably Husky fans have very little knowledge of?
Look, Pat Hayden, you talked about culture and Sark knowing the USC culture. Tuiasosopo, as you mentioned before, last time that UW was in a Rose Bowl, he was there 2-0, if I'm not mistaken, in his Apple Cup games. Right? Does that make sense to you?
Marcus as the quarterback?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was 2-0 in those matchups. He didn't start at a third, right? It was just the two.
No, he was the starting quarterback his junior and senior.
Okay, so then it's 2-0 in those Apple Cups, Rose Bowl appearance.
Rose Bowl victory.
Victory as well.
Rose Bowl MVP.
And a guy certainly that knows the culture at UW, so it's a good name and one that hasn't been out there as much. So it's just something to keep in mind. But the coaching carousel has been sort of turning here in the Pac-12 conference. Ted Miller from ESPN.com.
What I would hope, Mike, let me add this. What I would hope is that they have to make a decision now as to who's going to be the interim head coach. What I would hope is that Scott Woodward would name Marcus the interim head coach. Wilcox is in flux. If you're going to make Wilcox the interim head coach, I think you're going to have to do something that's going to keep him there. You know, if he's
because it's almost like you're leaning towards him.
Yeah, because he wants to go to USC. That's a hard
sell.
It's a hard sell. So if you made Marcus the interim head coach, it'd be an audition of sorts, and the kids, the players there, could get an idea of what he's like as a head coach. I think it sets up perfectly without anybody saying that it has to happen that way. Hey, this is all in flux. Throwing things and see what sticks.
Well, the chaos, and I call it chaos because you don't really know from 1 hour to the next. It's one guy's taking this job, this guy's going to take that job, and the carousel continues to turn around. Ted Miller, ESPN.com, covers the Pac-12 conference. You can also follow him at ESPN_Pac-12 blog. Had an opportunity to speak with him earlier today, and the first thing I asked him was just about his take on Sark taking the USC gig.
I was surprised. At midseason, when Washington was nationally ranked, I thought Sarkisian was a legitimate candidate for that job. Even at that point, though, I thought he was a dark horse. And then Washington had a three-game slide, lost the ranked team. Some of the Husky fans were getting impatient by the fact that it didn't seem like Washington was making that proverbial next step. So I thought he kind of fell out of favor. And on Monday, when I was at the ASU Arizona State press conference for the Pac-12 championship game, you know, my phone goes crazy with all sorts of calls from Bristol, Connecticut, talking about this hiring. So I was surprised. I was caught flat-footed. I think Steve Sarkisian is a good football coach. I think he did a good job at Washington. I don't think he did a perfect job. But I think what happened is that Pat Hayden just looked at his resume, look what he accomplished there, his recruiting, his charisma, his polished delivery with reporters and players and fans, et cetera. And I felt like he was a good fit for USC. He was familiar with Southern California, familiar with the program as a former assistant coach. I'm betting on Sarkisian doing well there. I was surprised a little bit, and it's definitely not a pizzazz hire, not the sort of home run Kevin Sumlin type hire that I think USC fans were hoping for. But I certainly think USC could have done worse, and USC, by the way, has done worse, and we know this with just recent history.
Ted, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if you're saying that you're surprised, give me the guy that you thought that could have been a better fit then.
You know, I thought they were going to get someone that had some more wow factor. I really thought that when they sent out that story, they were going to pay $6 million a year, and, you know, Sark's going to come in $2 million under that. When that thing came out, and I'm assuming that it was pretty legitimate, they were thinking Kevin Sumlin, a guy who has done wonders at Texas A&M, who's got a lot of national clout, and he was going to come in and kind of be this big-time hire. You could even say, I mean, obviously, they touched base with John Gruden. That would be someone that fans would have gone wow about. I mean, somebody of that caliber. I guess you could even say Chris Peterson at Boise State, because it would have said something that they could pry him away from Boise. I always felt like that was not a good fit. But I just thought the hire that Pat Hayden was going to go out and get a guy that USC fans were going to go wow to. And that's part of the reason I kind of felt all along that he wasn't really planning to go with Ed Orgeron, who just complicated his life further by winning all those games. And in the back, you know, Hayden's mind, of course, he never wants the Trojans to lose. I think when Orgeron lost to UCLA, it probably made his life a little bit easier, because I don't think even if he had beaten UCLA, he would have hired Orgeron. But it definitely made it easier for him to tell USC fans why he wasn't hiring him. It's because the Trojans, even though they did well under him, they lost to their two biggest rivals in UCLA and Notre Dame. And you just can't do that as the SC coach.
Ted, I'm glad you bring up Ed Orgeron. What's the fallout here? We know he's resigned. We know he's going to try to go and find him. Pat Hayden made reference to this during the press conference, which we aired on the Pac-12 networks. He said, look, you know, I hope he deserves to be a head coach. I guess the underlying issue is deserves to be a head coach, just not necessarily at USC. So where does Coach O, do you think, land?
Well, the one thing he did get to do, and that he should be grateful to USC, but, I mean, it was all on him, was that he rehabilitated the image that he had as the disaster at Ole Miss. He learned from his mistakes, evidently. He led that program at USC. He reversed course on the season. I think that what he has done is he's made himself a certain candidate to get an opportunity to lead a program. I think it's more likely that he'll get a second-tier program in an AQ conference, one that really wants to juice up recruiting, really needs to enthuse a fan base. And, you know, you could look across the country. Maybe Wake Forest has an opening now. I think that Ed Orgeron would be an interesting mix there, though. I would think that Winston-Salem, North Carolina, might be a little bit more aristocratic than Orgeron's cup of tea there. But I definitely think that he has earned an opportunity to lead a program. And I'll tell you this. I mean, it just didn't seem to me that he was going to be a head coach anywhere when he went back to USC after the Ole Miss thing. I definitely think he not only deserves an opportunity, I think he'll be successful wherever he goes. He's just kind of gotten his act together and polished some of those rough edges that we were all charmed by, but probably made it harder for him to get a head coaching job. He did a really good job at USC. I just felt all along that he didn't seem like a very good match with Hayden.
On the flip side here, because Sark leaves UW, now they have an opening. There was a lot of rumors swirling about Jim Mora, who's now going to stay with UCLA after getting that extension. Who's the guy then for the Huskies?
Well, you know, it's funny that I personally have almost been trying to put to rest the Gary Pinkel rumors. He's 61 years old. He's been at Missouri forever. He's about to play in the SEC title game. You would think he's got great facilities at Missouri. He's got all these bonuses coming in. He's making $2.7 million a year. I don't know how much higher on that Washington can go, and the cost of living in Seattle is so much higher that you'd think he'd have to get, you know, high to mid threes. But I keep hearing his name. I know a lot of old Don Jane type boosters really like Gary Pinkel. They wanted him hired back in 99 when our buddy Rick Neuheisel got hired for the Washington job. And I know that they looked at him again when they had vacancies after that and even had a couple of phone calls back then. But, he turned them down before, but his name keeps popping up. And so I don't count Gary Pinkel out of this. And he didn't help the situation by, after the SEC championship game interviews, by refusing to address the issue. He may just be angling for more money. Maybe he, you know, in the SEC, if you're getting paid $2.7 million, you're kind of in the middle. Maybe he's thinking he'd like to get his big bump and is trying to leverage this idea that maybe he's a candidate at Washington a little bit. So I think he's first in line for a lot of Husky fans. I think that if Chris Peterson is ever going to leave Boise State to try his hand in the AQ conference, that this is a great opportunity for him. He's, you know, Washington tried to get him before. USC talked to him. UCLA talked to him. He flirted, but he's always pulled back and stayed at Boise State. Well, Boise State went 8-4 this year. It's in this new system with a 14 playoff, Boise State's chances to get into that pretty remote. If he really does want to coach at the highest level and have a chance to play in the Rose Bowl, to play the national title game, this is his opportunity. You know, he's 49 years old. He's not the young coach he used to be. Maybe this is the time that he makes that jump. We include him in every single coaching search
every time
for a major program across the country, and he's always said no. He seems content in Boise. I think this actually sounds to me like it might be the measuring stick if he's ever going to leave.
I know we said that a few years ago
with Oregon, but he didn't. And, you know, maybe Oregon is the fantasy job for him. But I think, you know, he will be in the mix there. And then, you know, obviously Justin Wilcox, the fine defensive coordinator, would be a good candidate. I think he's already been chatting with some folks there. And maybe Tim DeRuiter at Fresno State would also be a good candidate. There's a lot of good names out there for Washington to look at.
All right. I wanted to also, we're talking to Tim Miller from ESPN.com, covers the Pac-12. You can follow him on Twitter at ESPN_Pac-12 blog. Ted, as far as the championship game goes this coming weekend, we've already seen it. We know what happened at least earlier this season, but it seems like Arizona State is playing as well as they have played at all. I know Rick has mentioned this to me, that they are playing, they're at the peak of their confidence level. So tell me why this game is going to be different on Saturday.
Well, they've won seven in a row. They're playing at home where they're unbeaten, 7-0, average margin of victory, 28 points. Stanford, great team at home, but has not been great on the road. It lost its two games on the road to teams that it should have beaten in Utah, decisively should have beaten Utah, and then USC should have beaten USC also. So Stanford has not been great on the road. Quarterback Kevin Hogan has not been the same player on the road. And Arizona State is great at home, and it's peaking at the right time. There's a reason why Las Vegas has the Sun Devils as a favorite. And it might seem surprising to some people because this thing with Todd Graham has moved very quickly in the positive direction. I think that they're clicking on both sides. Well, really, I mean, first of all, Arizona State's going to have to figure out things on the defensive line of scrimmage. They're going to have to be – they got blown away in the first half, particularly at Stanford. They're going to have to do something to correct that problem because that Stanford offensive line ate their lunch. Number two, they're going to have to take care of special teams. I think they had two block punts, critical special teams errors. I think that they've corrected those errors this year, so they're probably not going to lose that battle as badly as they did at Stanford. And obviously the offense is going to have to do something against a defense that held them to 50 yards rushing. But from what I've seen from Arizona State of late, when I watched them just beat the crud out of Arizona last weekend, I just think this team is clicking. And I think Arizona State's got a very, very good chance to get to its first Rose Bowl since 96.
All right, certainly looking forward to that matchup. Ted Miller, once again, you can follow him on Twitter at ESPN_Pac-12 blog. Ted, appreciate you stopping by with us here on the podcast.
Sounds good, Mike. Thanks.
Well, once again, good to have Ted Miller on. Kadeem Carey, the Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year, an interview with him coming up in just a few moments' time. Ted says that he likes Arizona State in this game against Stanford, thinks they're playing good football. I had referenced the fact that you think that they are on an all-time high this season in terms of confidence. Are you buying them, though, for a win here?
Only if they can get Stanford into third and long. They have to hold Stanford under 40% on third downs, in my estimation, to make this game a winnable game for them. Stanford, if they can hold the ball and they can churn out rushing yards as they did the first time the two teams played, and obviously Arizona State's much improved since that time, but if they can hold the ball and you know, have 35 to 45 minutes of possession time, which they do, they're kind of like a boa constrictor. They just kind of squeeze you out of your life. If they can do that to Arizona State, not only does it demoralize a team, it demoralizes a fan base, and so your home field advantage goes away. And to me, that has been the key to the resurrection of Stanford since the Utah loss. Tyler Gaffney, 18 carries prior to the Utah game, averaging, and now 29 carries, and he had his career high against Notre Dame, which obviously is a stout run defense. So this is imperative that Arizona State defensively get them to third and long, make Kevin Hogan throw the ball more than 20 passes. Go back to the Oregon game, he only threw 13. You know, I think the stat is in their 10 wins, he's thrown 15 passes in the entire of all fourth quarters combined. That's 10 fourth quarters, 15 passes. So if they can get you into that
just
kind of
run,
game
run,
where
run.
They're pounding, that's a tough game to win. If you can get it into a situation where you make him have to throw on third down and you can cause him to throw it to you a couple times. Arizona State's been hugely opportunistic in their secondary, 18 interceptions since the last time they played Stanford. These are all keys to this game in my mind.
You continued to point towards the Washington game against Arizona State as sort of the difference maker, the turning point for that ASU defense. Bishop Sankey, who led the conference in rushing this season, held to
22 yards.
22 yards.
Yeah.
It was under 30 yards. So 22 yards he's held to in this game. Why are we buying, though, that this defense can do a significantly good job against a Stanford offensive line that has been nothing but gangbusters? And as you mentioned, Tyler Gaffney, who continues to flourish down the stretch.
Well, I don't necessarily say we have to buy it, but that's going to be the key.
Yeah.
That's the recipe because, you know, when they went through that gauntlet of the season where they had to play Wisconsin and then Stanford and then USC and then Notre Dame, they averaged during those four games something like 239 yards a game given up rushing. Okay. Each of the first three opponents, I think Notre Dame had 145 yards rushing, but each of the first three opponents had well over 200 yards. So, to me, They have to keep that from happening. Just going back to the conversation we just had, that is absolutely mandated, because you can't allow the field position and the time of possession to swing so heavily to Stanford. If they can do that, if they can handle that, then they're poised offensively with enough weapons. Remember, Jalen Strong kind of came of age in the second half of that game. He's turned out to be a 1,000-yard receiver for Arizona State, and certainly a weapon when he's healthy, having a big game against Arizona. This, to me, is a huge, huge contest. I think we're going to see both teams play well. And if it comes down to a kick, you got to like the Devils. Zane Gonzalez, since the Stanford game, Mike, 18 of 18.
Money. Money.
A huge coup in the recruiting minefield that Todd Graham harvested a year ago.
Well, I will say this. When it comes to the pregame coverage of the championship game,
there's no place like the Pac-12 Network.
Pregame show Saturday.
Any multiple re-airs?
Not on the pregame show, because we're taking everyone up until 4 p.m., or we start, at 4 p.m., and then as soon as the game is over, there will be probably multiple re-airs of the post-game report, roughly around 8:30, as soon as the matchup, that Pac-12 championship is over. Pac-12 Networks is where you want to be. Myself, Rick Neuheisel, Curtis Conway in the saddle, ready to rock and roll. Reports from Ashley Adamson and Yogi Roth. They will be in Tempe covering and blanketing the coverage for us. So we essentially have the West Coast covered for this Pac-12 championship.
As well as primetime.
Yes. Just to throw that out there. Some accolades that have been handed out over the last couple days. Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year. On Sunday, we had Playbook. 9 p.m. Pacific, multiple re-airs. You and Ronnie Lott gave your offensive players of the year, and in your mind and in Ronnie's mind, there was no better choice for Pac-12 offensive player of the year than Kadeem Carey. And if I'm not mistaken, he's the only player, thought I read this, that was on the first team all-bout for every coach in the entire conference. That's how strong he was. It's almost surprising to... in the sense that this guy has been able to have the success that he has had in back-to-back seasons, and yet, you know, what could have been. He could have led the conference 2 years in a row in rushing had he not been suspended for that first game, really a game and a half to start off the year. But he is in the pantheon of running performances. What have you seen from him this year that has you thinking, not only did he deserve to be the best running back in the Pac-12, but you'd make the argument he's the best in the country?
Well, we've articulated all the different things, attributes he has that great running backs have. He's got, you know, first certainly the size and the speed for the position. He's got the balance. He stays on his feet remarkably well. He's got great vision. He's got great feet and the ability to make cuts in the hole and so forth, but press the point so you invite defenses or defenders to come and take you, and then all of a sudden you're bouncing out and around him. He can finish runs with his speed. So all the different things that you look for, he's got. But maybe the thing that I admire most is his consistency, because he clearly, there was no question that opposing defensive coordinators were going to have to stop him. And I think people just gave up the idea of stopping him. They said, we're going to try to contain him. And containing him means he averaged about 150 a game, despite the fact that he was carrying two and three defenders almost every down for a couple of yards, always falling forward, always and tireless. 48 carries against the University of Oregon. And Rich Rodriguez, you know, has been around lots of great runners in his time as an offensive coach, you know, because he's such a run-first coach, whether it be West Virginia, Michigan, or now Arizona. He's seen a lot. He's never had one like this. This guy is unique. And Arizona, if he should decide that this is his final college season, they're going to miss him. We thought they'd miss Matt Scott. B.J. Denker, I thought, played, you know, heroically. They're going to miss Kadeem Carey. He's a hard one to replace.
Funny you mentioned the NFL and Kadeem Carey. That was one of the questions that I asked him for Pac-12 Football Weekly, Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Multiple re-airs.
Yes, there will be. He was a guest earlier today. Here's a listen to that interview.
Kadeem Carey, one of the greatest athletes that has ever played at this school.
And here he goes again. Into the end zone goes Kadeem Carey.
Touchdown, Wildcats! Kadeem Carey.
Holy cow!
That's three touchdowns on the day.
He now owns the touchdown record at Arizona. Watch out. Goodbye. Hello, end zone. Some power, some speed, some trickery. He deserves a drink of water and a seat.
It seems like a lot of times you obviously are acting like a superhero when you're on the field, and you actually became the school's first Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year. You get an honor like that. How much of a blessing is it for you?
I mean, that's truly a blessing to me, just because of what all I've been through, and just going out there and just giving all I got. I feel like I turned into a superhero out there, and just to feel like it just paid off this year.
Kadeem, your name has creeped up, especially after the Oregon matchup where you rushed for over 200 yards and four touchdowns, into the Heisman conversation. What would a trip to New York mean to you?
That means a lot. I mean, a lot only to me, but to this program. Just that trip to New York, just to sit there where a lot of great players have sat before, and that would be just an honor to me and to this program.
Kadeem, a lot of people will always say that when it comes to having a Heisman moment and to win the Heisman, you got to have one of those moments. What was yours from this past year?
From this past year?
Yeah.
I would definitely have to say just beating Oregon, going out there and just grinding throughout that game, just playing with this team, this senior class, just all of this year. I mean, what all we've been through and just bonding and just the moments that I had out there performing, and Oregon was one of the top moments.
Kadeem, was there a favorite specific play that you had from this past season?
I would definitely have to say, I haven't even looked back over them really. Oh, actually, the one that really stands out was UNLV. When I first got into that game, my first touch, I just took it all the way to the house. Got all the nerves out and it was ready to play this season.
It seemed like the jitters got off of your game real quick as soon as you checked into that matchup earlier this season. A lot of times our guys will point to your running style and mm-hmm. they describe it as violent because you're always seeming to want to take the hits and then obviously give the hits. What is it about the physicality of your style that has you so excited when you hit the field?
Just knowing that they're going to be coming after you every play. I mean, they want to take off your head, so why not you go take off their head and deliver the blow? So I find that entertainment when I step on the field. I take pride in just going out there and playing football, because football is just attacking the other person and going out there and having fun. And that's what I do every time I step on the field.
Kadeem, a couple weeks back, we had Jake Fisher on the show, and he talked about you as a leader on this football team. And obviously, you were suspended for the first week of the season. Rich Rodriguez came out and said, look, Kadeem has done everything that we have asked him to do. And yet, some of the critics will point to that suspension and say, hey, that's a reason for him not to get the Heisman. Jake had said that is the furthest thing from the truth. So what's your response to the critics that will point to that as a reason why you shouldn't be invited to New York?
Definitely, because as a student athlete, you have to look as an overall player, and I definitely feel like I'm an overall player. As student first, I'm great in the class, I'm great off the field. I mean, I just want people to know me. I like the smile, as you can see, I have on my face now. And I'm a good student, I mean, I'm a good dude. But you shouldn't look at it and just play football, and that's what I do, and I have fun at it.
Kadeem, you have had plenty of success on the field. You matched up against Arizona State this past weekend. Now, the Sun Devils, they're going to be playing in the Pac-12 championship game mm-hmm. against Stanford. You know what it's like to go up against that ASU defense. So what's the advice that you would give Tyler Gaffney?
I would definitely say their defensive line is fast and they're physical, and I love how they attack and they fly to the ball. And if you can take care and you can control the defensive line, then Stanford have some success. And the secondary for ASU, I mean, they're pretty good, but that defensive line stands out.
Who would you pick in that game?
I'm just going to go off of the last experience. I mean, Stanford did win, and that is our rival team, so I'm going to go for Stanford in this one.
All right, fair enough. You know, Kadeem, Curtis Conway, one of our analysts, dating back to even last year, and he has hammered this point home this season. He thinks that you are the most NFL-ready running back, not only in the conference, but in the country. How much thought have you given to playing at the next level?
I haven't given it much thought yet. I mean, that's definitely an honor that they're definitely saying that. I'm just preparing my body just for the next season, for the next game. I'm really just looking forward to just in small moments. But just to say that, that's a blessing.
Kadeem, what's the best part about being a student athlete at Arizona?
Just this community. just being growing up here, because I grew up here, so I know everything about Tucson, and there's a lot to give. It's always sunny. It's fun out here. It's the desert, going on hikes. Just being here is just perfect.
Kadeem, always appreciate you giving us some time. Congratulations once again on being named Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year. Best of luck to you in the future.
Thank you.
Well, great opportunity to talk to Kadeem Carey, once again, the Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year. That was an interview that we did on Pac-12 Football Weekly, Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Multiple re-airs.
With a couple different re-airs. All right, end of the show. And, you know, here's a funny thing for you. Kadeem was getting mic'd up for that interview. We were waiting for him for a little bit, and I was there earlier for another interview with another guest that we couldn't.
Because we need to get the YamCam.
I knew that was coming.
The YamCam has to be featured.
I was pretty sure that was going to pop up in this conversation.
By the way, yes. Modern Yamily was all.
Oh, my God. Well, that was an all-timer. Modern Yamily, if you didn't see it over the weekend. I did ask for a best of for the upcoming week.
Did you?
Yeah. So we'll see.
If that isn't a draw to our pregame and postgame coverage, I don't know what is.
Yeah, and once again, you'll be able to catch that pregame show, Rick. Saturday at 4 p.m. Pacific postgame show as soon as the championship game is done. But we were waiting for the guest. The whole point was there was a conversation that we had, and I asked you this question a couple weeks ago. Would you rather be a rock star or a professional athlete?
No, country star. That's what I said.
So you said you'd rather be a country star. So I said to Kadeem, because he was getting mic'd up, and I said, hey, we're just having this debate, and because you actually are going to be an NFL star, would you rather be a professional athlete or a rock star? And he starts laughing. He's like, nah, man, I want to be a professional athlete. So just some perspective that Kadeem does have his priorities straight up.
Well, and he knows that he can be.
Yes. That also helps.
You didn't broach the question with, and this could be a reality. I couldn't have answered any of that stuff if it were just a reality. Yeah. It had to be reality.
I should have switched it. Like, hey, if you could be an NBA player or
PGA Tour golfer.
You know, golfer, your top three sports, what would they be to be a pro at, if you had to rank them? So PGA Tour golf.
Well, it depends on what age you are, right? If I go back, I would have loved to have played in the NFL for 12 years and so forth. But I love golf right now. I'd love to be on the tour. That would be a thrill and compete in that regard.
Just totally got to, not to go on a tangent here, but because it's a podcast, we can. I met someone last night that said that they played with you, that you were... It was you and him versus Spurrier and someone else a while ago.
And we won, right?
Yeah, you won. You know who I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. I'll fill you in the story later. I've played
with Steve many times.
Yes.
But I beat him. I think he's beaten me one time. So I'm just using percentages here. And the one time he beat me, we were by ourselves. So
yeah. So no, this was another individual who I met last night. Who said, "Oh, tell Rick, he's a great golfer. Me and him, we played Spurrier, and I forget who Spurrier's partner was at the time, but he said that you guys had won, and he said that you guys won because of you and your game, which did not surprise me.
I'm a team guy, Mike.
Yes,
we win as a team.
And end of every show, we wrap it up with a little two big predictions, one on football, one on Homeland. You are caught up on Homeland?
I am. It was an outstanding episode. They're in the field now, Mike.
I wish I watched it, but I as you know, Rick, I was not 100% these last few days.
But for those who are paying close attention, our man, Mr. Yam, deserves a Purple Heart.
Oh, look at that. I'll take props from you. One time I'm not the soft guy in the room.
He was heroic in his ability to perform in the postgame show with a bucket next to his seat just in the event that there was a discharge.
You actually turned to me and I said, what's
what
the bucket
is this?
For? I go, just in case. Just,
I said, oh, my goodness. I said, I'll take it over for you.
Yeah. Well, and that
being
was,
the good team
you,
guy that
you,
I am.
You were. But here is the deal, though. I didn't want, obviously, to have a YouTube moment. I was seriously concerned that I might throw
you were
up.
Beating up. You were sweating. Yeah, you were asking why it's so cold in here.
I was freezing.
It wasn't exactly like we were in Rocky's meat locker. You know, I'm looking the at regular you. This guy's studio. Going down. So for those of you who were paying close attention to the postgame show,
why I look chalk white?
It was
set,
a heroic effort, and such to the point that he had to go to the emergency room following our performance.
Got
and,
a couple IVs. That, by the way, my first time ever getting IVs.
Which is worse, emergency room, waiting room, or bus?
I think the same guy that was screaming. I swear to God.
They're extras. They go from the bus to the waiting
Dead
room.
Dead serious. I thought of you today on this ride to the bus. I had this guy in the emergency room. Now, keep in mind, this is 2 in the morning on a Saturday
Did
night in San
Francisco.
Did you
talk to somebody in the
Hell
waiting room?
Hell no. I was so weak. The guy, the nurse that's in there says to me, hey, can you sit over here? I looked at the guy and I go, I can't move. I just have to sit here. Is that okay?
And then the next day, you Willis Reed it. We're told you're not going to make it.
No, because
Ashley's going to take over for you and do playbook, by the way.
Sunday nights,
multiple rears.
Yes.
But here he walks, like wearing number 19, New York Knicks jersey. You know, Willis Reed is here.
No, here's, you know what?
By the way,
it was our last
How does a guy who weighs a buck 30 lose 10 pounds in one night?
Buck 50, I'm telling you, it was bad. They hooked me up. Here's the worst part of the IV.
Don't show me the wound.
No.
I'm not interested.
Look at this. Look at that. They gave me the lady goes, hey, you have really good veins. So I was like, all right, that's a win. Hooks me.
Did
was
you
that
get
her
a
line?
Number?
Was that
Did
her
you get
line?
A number?
God, I was so. Now that I'm telling this story, this
you're having a conversation.
Line.
See,
yeah,
we're moving in
oh,
the right direction.
Oh no! But here's the point. Here's the point. So it's 2 in the morning on a Saturday night in San Francisco in an emergency room, which I had doubts about going to in the first place. I'm glad I did. I had this guy screaming for 2 straight hours. He must have been 10, 15 feet away from me, cursing, yelling at every. I mean, he was going nuts. I am convinced that this morning, on my way to work,
was he a guy outside of our distribution deal? Was he just upset he couldn't get the Pac-12
networks? I think he turned to me and he's like, "Why can't I get you? I'm trying. That Neuheisel's telling me to validate, and I can watch online. I can't watch though. What's happening?" So I swear to God, I get onto the bus today. I think it's the same dude who's yelling. He wasn't talking to me. At least I didn't think he was. He goes,
I'd change up your route.
I'm going to murder you if you're the devil. This is what he's yelling in the back of the bus. At that point, I'm thinking to myself,
oh, good. I'm not the devil.
I wish
no horns here.
There's only a halo above this head, buddy.
I might change the hairdo for a little while.
Oh, man. That ER experience was.
We're just glad you're back, and we just want to say, gosh, what a heroic effort, Mike.
Well, I will take the praise from you because normally I'm considered the soft guy. Here was the other thing, though. It was the last regular season playbook, and I have a feeling that you are going to be on the sidelines somewhere. So I'm trying to hold on to my Rick Neuheisel time. So, and I can always say,
You did it for me.
I did it for you. I swear to God, I did it for you. I woke up. I was dizzy, nauseous.
Oh,
I said, get the bucket on the
gracious set.
Because when Rick goes back to coaching, he's going to say—
The old oaken bucket. That's what we're going to call it.
You're going to tell your team—
You and I are playing for the old oaken bucket.
You're going to tell your team about the toughest host that you ever worked
with. Let me introduce you fellas to the toughest man I ever worked with.
In comes 5'8", buck 50, Mike Yam, to talk to the team.
Oh,
but your two big predictions, one on football and one on Homeland. What do you have for me?
Homeland's going to get— very, very dicey here. First of all, we shouldn't ruin it for anybody who hadn't seen it, right? We shouldn't talk about details of the show.
I'm fine with it. We're
no,
past.
I don't want to do that.
Okay.
My point is, Brody is in. Okay, he's on his way to Tehran, yes, which is where his mission needs to be performed, and this is going to get wild in and around. And I'm wondering when. By the way, Carrie said the baby wasn't his.
She said, I think that wasn't a legit, it wasn't his.
I agree with you, but I think that we're going to use that the baby is there as a way to get Brody to finish so that he wants to get back. Somehow they're going to use that as a twist to get back.
I'll give you that one.
And Quinn's still got some.
Quinn's got game.
Quinn's going to go and try to get close to carrying, I think he's going to get rebuked.
Quinn is still, I don't think so.
Like you do.
On the bus or in life, either way. Your prediction for the Pac-12 championship game?
I think it's going to be a whale of a ball game. I think low scoring.
Wow, okay.
And I think...
low scoring, wouldn't that favor Stanford?
Yes, it would. But I think Arizona State's up to it. I think there'll be a couple of key turnovers. And I think Zane Gonzalez is the hero, and the Devils win by 3-2 or 1.
Can I just throw something out at you? You just said two things. Field goal, so I'll give you the advantage there, but low scoring and turnovers. Don't you think that that Arizona State is more susceptible to turning the ball over than Stanford.
You would think that, but that's absolutely not the case. Arizona State, since the time they played, mm-hmm. is plus 11 in turnover margin, and Stanford is dead even. Know your history.
I'll tell you what, that was on a board the other day that we did.
That is a
great call. I set you up. That's what a good
does. Exactly.
We will see you Saturday night, 4 p.m. for the pregame show.
What are you going to come down with this Saturday? What sort of malady are you going to do?
I am dialed in. I am absolutely. I've been hydrating. I've been drinking juice. I've been trying to take care of myself.
Juice. Okay. What is this, a sippy cup?
You remember those Capri Suns?
Don't. Just keep moving along.
We'll see you Saturday. Saturday here on the Pac-12 Networks for coverage of the Pac-12 Championship game.
This is the Pac-12 Networks Football Podcast.